Soul Sister Radio.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Whoever believes in me will do the same works I have done, and even greater works. This wasn't lip service. Jesus was talking to you. Every Soul Sister Friday at 10 a.m., learn how to claim your God-given dominion to follow the Master's example and restore health, demonstrate supply, harmonize relationships, and have victory over sin with Healing Through Prayer with Corrine Walson. Spiritual solutions to life's challenges.
Radio.
Welcome to 4 International Soul Sister Radio. I am your producer, Maria DiGiovanni, welcoming you to the Soul Sister Experience. First, a special thank you to our station sponsor, ImageMakeoverProgram.com. who make it possible to record live and broadcast worldwide. We invite you to get ready to enjoy the show. Take it away, my soul sister.
Welcome, everybody. This is Stacy Sir. It's Murphy's Law. And I just want to welcome you. Thank you for joining us. We are Safety First is Murphy's Law. And this is Tracy, and we're joined with my co-host, Star Myers from Voices Amplify. Star, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Glad to be here.
How are you?
I'm lovely. I am so excited for our guest tonight, who I believe is in the queue, or is she on with us?
And this is our special guest, and her name is Dawn Schiller. Dawn,
yeah.
She has an amazing, amazing story, and what she has done with her life will impact you after you hear from her.
Yes.
There's no questions. No question. Dawn is the founder of Esteem, E-S-T-E-A-M, not normally, which they are an organization that reaches out and collaborate with communities offering support with the hope of empowering them and to grow into happy, healthy, successful adults. She speaks all over the place, and she is the author of the book Road Through Wonderland, Surviving John Holmes. And I'd like to welcome Dawn Schiller, if you're here. Dawn?
Yeah, hi.
Yay.
Good afternoon.
We didn't get a chance to chat earlier, but I wanted to say hi. I haven't talked to you, but we met. We met at the 2010 NCADV conference. And I wanted, and you signed my book, and
oh.
I was there with my son, and my son met you, and it was a very moving experience. And I wanted to share that with you before the show, just
oh.
so we made that connection, but we didn't. So I'm telling you now.
Oh.
But
at the NCADV in 2010, where were we? In Denver or in LA?
No, we
Anaheim.
Were in Anaheim.
Anaheim. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I had my son with me. He was, I think, like
oh.
10 or 12 years old then, and it was a memorable experience for them, too, and I just, anyway, want to welcome you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I think, you know, what happens is we, as advocates, we end up doing so much work that we lose track of people that we meet at significant times for us. So it's really good to come full circle and meet you again and meet you with this website that I'm really just learning about, or your radio show that I'm just learning about and I'm excited about. So, yeah, good
well,
work.
You know, thank you, because the interesting thing is when I was at the conference in 2010, mm-hmm. I was still very much the victim, and
mm-hmm.
I was just fresh out of escaping the abuse and getting
wow.
safe and starting, you know,
wow.
that journey.
Right.
So this is where I am today, and it's 3 years later.
Right.
And a lot has happened. A lot has happened. Susan Merckx Milano came into my life, educated me. She saved my life. She got me safe and on my own and nowhere,
yeah.
you know, close to being in that type of a life or a situation ever again.
Yeah,
so,
can we say what a great legacy Susan has left all of us? She's really she's paved the way for a lot of women, and she's given us a lot of hope. I mean, I met her later in you know, after I was already in healing and in, you know, survivorship, but we miss her. Yeah, you know, I got close. Are you okay?
Oh, me, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I thought I heard something.
Oh no.
No, but I just want to acknowledge her, you know, and Delilah and all the work that they did. And, you know, I only knew her briefly, but certainly I was on a few of her shows and was honored to do so. And she wrote a little blurb for my book also. So
that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, that's why our show is here. we have created
Delilah is actually listening right now.
Oh, go figure. Delilah, where are you?
Yes. She's in the chat room. Yes.
Yes. So if it wasn't for Susan, the show wouldn't be here. Let's just put it that way. And I always educate people with the work that Susan does, and I will always support the evidentiary abuse affidavit and do my best to educate people and pass them on to people that need to learn this as well, as well as Susan's books and document the abuse.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
Dawn, let's talk about you.
If we have to, that's fine.
You know, talking about full circle, you know, I would say that's your life. I'd say you've pretty much come full circle from every which way.
Yeah, you know, I think I identify as a victim of DV, domestic violence and sexual assault. I identify as a sexual trafficking victim. But I think in, you know, and all of those are layered. You know, when we're immersed in abuse, what I found is that there's one abuse is layered on top of another abuse, and sometimes it's an avalanche. And what I found in my recovery and in my healing is that I identify mostly with, for me, where the core of things happened, and that is being that throwaway kid. Identify being this kid, the vulnerable teenager that, you know, because of abuse and neglect in my own home, you know, by no fault of being a kid born into a family that was either incapable or chose to be abusive, I ended up vulnerable to an older pedophile who in our apartment complex who he preyed upon me, he focused on me, he manipulated and he gained control of me. You know, it was a predatory thing. And so today when I speak, and I think that the presentation that you saw at the NCADV was on my throwaway teen, who are they and how can we help? And so that's really where, for me, I've been guided to do my best work. I feel like my voice has the strongest impact because of that experience. And so what I did was I did the research that you saw, the presentation that you saw was had after a year's worth of research and putting together the data, not only the experience of being a survivor, but coupling that with the data out there of other young kids who are experiencing the same abuse and neglect and how they fall prey and are victimized because of that early experience of not getting proper guardianship.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the emotional neglect is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it really plays a big role in our decision. Like you said, you had a predator. That was not your fault. And you did the best with the knowledge that you had in your life, and that man preyed upon you. But like you're saying with other teens, a lot of times they don't see that. They don't understand what's happening. How can you, what would you say to, let's say, if teens were listening right now, you know, what is that that they do?
Yeah, well, I think I would give a little background of my story. But, you know, I was 15 years old when I was, my parents divorced. I chose to go with my father, who had abandoned us for 7 years and then came back just for a divorce. And only because my mother was so aggressive and physically and emotionally abusive towards us did I choose to go with my father, who I thought he was cool because he was a hippie and he smoked pot. And, you know, at that age, I was also in a gang-infested neighborhood, it was a way that we survived, you know. And oftentimes that happens to a lot of kids who are living in poverty, who are living in, neglected environments because of poverty, socioeconomic issues, whatever the reason. If your parents are maybe, you know, disabled or abusive
or busy. You know, what I see is they're busy. Their corporate, you know, world is so important that they're leaving their kids to fend for themselves. find their food, find their lunch, find their dinner, because they've got meetings,
yes.
they've got functions,
yes.
they've got all these other things. When a young teen left to make their own decisions,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
you're right.
Absolutely.
So
they,
it really
and it also leaves them... It leaves them open to other people who are kind of, you know, the predators, the people that are looking for the easy target. And let me tell you something. When you're a teenager and, you know, specifically you're just starting to come into your body, you're just starting to come into your hormones, you don't, you know, you're doing the regular teenage stuff. You want to have your independence. You don't, you know, you need some serious guidance. But it's also
right.
that point in your life where, you know, a predator is going to go, oh, boy, look at that. You know,
uh-huh.
is anybody
uh-huh.
looking out
Where
for
your
her?
Parents?
Yeah.
That's
is anybody
right.
looking out for him? You know, and the easier it is. And in my case, I went with my father, and my father moved us to California. We were very poor. We didn't have much. I was worried about my little sister eating because she came with us too. And lo and behold, the apartment complex manager was a 32-year-old porn star at night. And the apartment complex manager in the daytime. And I didn't know anything about porn, even though I thought I was tough because I'd grown, you know, I was surviving a gang-infested street. But still, that was that level of information wasn't in my world at that time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and he just had, I mean, he was 32 years old. He was, you know, a supposedly sought-after pornography actor. So, I mean, he really knew what he was doing, what I'm getting to. Is so, and
That's
I
right.
hadn't a clue, you know. And this is often the case, you know. You don't have the wherewithal to protect yourself, and so you need a parent. And what John did, his name was John Holmes, and that's why the book's called Surviving John Holmes. But what he did was he just scoped out what was around me. He scoped out what I needed, what was going to, you know, like, first of all, he, you know, he made little, like, passes at me, you know, to see how I would react, and I would act, like,
mm-hmm.
incensed and, you know, like, ew, gross, you're an old guy, and things like that. But then he would laugh about it, and then he would stay his distance, and then he would befriend my father, and he brought my father pot, so my father was more apt to, you know, then he would ask permission to take me on errands, to go to the hardware store, because he was also the manager of the building, so then he gave me little odd jobs so I could earn some money because we were really poor, and he brought us food, and then he started waking me up every morning for school, and nobody would say anything, nobody would do anything, but little by little, it took him 6 months, he inched into this position of power in my life, and then he complimented me, and he said the things to me, a kid who had an abusive mom and an absent father in a rough coming from a rough neighborhood, had never had anybody say she was pretty or smart or care that I had poetry inside of me. And so he paid attention to those little things, and I thought, wow, you know, and then
right.
little gifts started happening. And so all of this is called seduction, and it's extremely powerful. And it doesn't take much, trust me. For a kid who's really vulnerable, it doesn't take much, because we are all creatures who crave love. And if we've come
mm-hmm.
from a background of abuse and neglect, we have not, we are deprived, we're dry. We are like the desert waiting for any little raindrop to, you know, to feed us, because we're starving. We're starving.
Right. Hungry.
And hungry. And so that's the hook. And so when I do want to talk to kids, I tell them all these little details and all these little nuances and the things that he did that seem so innocent. If you look at it in one snapshot in time, but if you put it all together and you say, wait a minute, where's the red flags? Red flag number one, he's 32 years old.
Right.
You're 15. Red flag number two, he has no business asking you if you have a boyfriend. Red flag number three, he has no business waking you up for school every day and, you know, worrying about where you are. You know, red flag number three, he has no business giving you marijuana and getting
right.
high with you.
Well,
and the big red flag is, hello, he does pornography, and the adults around me knew it.
And the adults around you knew it, but then it was all
kept
from me.
It was all
And to an outsider, those the seduction that you're, they also maybe like grooming, it's not really apparent to an outsider because it is one little, you know, walking by little thing. You know, as you're accumulating all of these things together, you know, and then you go to speak to somebody or tell somebody, they're going, oh, no, he's, you know, he seems normal. Oh, he's I can see how that would be very, very difficult.
And one of the most, this is what I highlight, one of the most evil things, I think, and one of the most, it's the way the hook is set. It's like when you're fishing, the hook, you pull, you yank back on that rod and you set that hook. The way the hook is set is when they turn it, they put it into a situation, they spin the situation to where it appears that you are making the decision. Because once you feel that you are in love, that you, this is what I want. No, this is true. Then whatever happens, illegal or not illegal, wanted really or not wanted, is going to be your fault. And that guilt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Ladies, we need to take a brief break for
okay.
a second.
Okay.
Already? Holy cow.
Yes. We're working on a new thing. I want to take a second to thank our show sponsors. That would be Imagine Publicity. Delilah, I know you're listening, so I want to thank you for your support. BrainBiz, Voices Amplified, and I want to thank Susan Shingazar. She is our show sponsor.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
And for Ambassador Program, Image Makeover Program, and Heart4.com.
Nice.
And I want to thank her because without you guys and our listeners, we would not be here.
Wonderful.
Thank you very, very much. Well, thank you, Star. Dawn?
Yes, I'm here. Was that our commercial?
I know, I'm wondering.
Yes, we're out of commercial.
Oh, good. And thank you to
actually, ladies.
I hated
This is Maria here, the producer, and we're actually trying something new. I've asked Delilah, thank you, from Image Publicity to make sure that we do get our new commercials and from Voices Amplified. And so we're learning something new, and I want to thank our amazing guests listening to you. From my perspective, I'm really enjoying you. So thank you so much for supporting Safety First is Murphy's Law. And these amazing women who so deserve to be elevated and empowered. And you being on the show today is doing just that. So thank you so much. And we will be taking another commercial break at the half hour, and then we're going to try it again verbally, again, to really thank those who are making this possible. And we will do that again at the quarter hour, too. So thank you so much.
Okay,
great.
Thank you, Maria. All right, Dawn, I'm so sorry for that interruption. And,
oh, that's okay.
I didn't mean to say it like that, but
yeah.
I wanted to get back to where we were.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think the important thing, too, so my message is to the kids that, you know, it's not your fault. Red flags are important to not, brush under the carpet. The red flags are there. They can be subtle because that's what seduction is. It's a subtle way of drawing you in. And the hook is what keeps you there and keeps you in fear because that's what the predator is going to use against you. It's going to turn around and say, well, you wanted this. Well,
right.
You know, and then all of a sudden, you think this person tells you that you've had this power, and you have no idea how that power turned against you. You didn't even know you were wielding it. It's a very slick form of manipulation, and it is the biggest hook that I see that gets a lot of these young girls. And, you know, the results of being hooked by somebody who has their selfish sexual intent or other intent towards you, you know, really, and, you know, you got to think about it, too. Something's wrong with the picture, big red flag. If somebody's feeding you with one hand, that seems nice, but then asking you to go into the back room with you with the other hand, you know. And if you're in a survival mode thinking, okay, well, I better be nice because I don't know how I'm going to eat otherwise. Yeah.
Right.
How is my sister going to eat? You know, I'm responsible for her and we can't make him mad, you know, and he started all that stuff initially. And that's just the way to get you into that control.
Even the power and control.
Power and control. And he saw me actually as a piece of property and he wanted to own it. And that's what he did. And he kept me pretty well hidden in his, you know, back garage apartment for a lot of years until he got very heavily into the cocaine. And, you know, and he kept the pot coming, and then he brought the cocaine home and got me addicted to that. And then, of course, that ended up being my fault. And it wasn't long after that that he saw me as a possession to traffic on the streets of Hollywood for a couple of years. And so that was a whole nother level of trauma. And I, you know, again, the more control and the more power he had and the lower he sunk, the lower he was dragging me with him. And it got to the point where I did not know how to get out. I didn't think anybody was going to help me. He had me afraid of the police, who I, when I talk to kids now, when I go to high schools, I tell them, I said, let me tell you something. These people, they care about you. And it may be that there's the law is scary. And it may be that your predator or the person that is harming you is saying, you know, they just want to, you know, arrest you and they're going to throw you in jail. They're going to take away your kids. Well, all those threats that they give you, they're just using that against you because the police can actually help you. And I truly 100% believe that. And of course, we know that there are bad, you know, even Susan, you know, yeah,
right.
Susan Murphy Milano's own story was tragic in, you know, the law enforcement world. But there are a lot of good law enforcement out there.
That's
and
right.
They really are trying to change. They're, you know, they're becoming engaged and listening to what these
mm-hmm.
kids have to say and how best to rescue them. You know, having to work within the confines of the law and deal with, you know, and help kids is a tricky thing. You want to gain their trust, but there's this thing called mandatory reporting that, you know, kids are afraid of. They don't want.
It scares them.
Yeah, it scares them. So, but, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, what happened to me was John got me when I was 15 and had me hidden and until I was almost 2 weeks before I was 21. So for 5.5 years, almost 6 years, I was under his control. And it wasn't until I was 18 and a half, 19 years old did he start trafficking me. And at that point, the law would have looked at me as an adult. And
yes.
So the services weren't there as a child victim of trafficking, even though he had been molesting me and sexually assaulting me since I was a kid.
Well, you know what? That's really interesting. What you're saying right there is that little piece is
mm-hmm.
when you are the victim of being trafficked, I think the victim, this is what I'm learning, and you can speak from experience, but
mm-hmm.
they really feel that it is their fault and they're so ashamed. And then
yeah.
the fact that maybe the law enforcement may be aggressive at the beginning and they take you away, they're
mm-hmm.
going to understand when you explain to them. And
right.
I've seen or. There's some stuff around here that it just breaks my heart because they are so in fear of being in trouble for what they've done.
Yes.
But they're not
yeah.
they're not willing to go all the way back and, you know, really
mm-hmm.
tell the story.
Well, and the fear because the shame is just almost, you know, it's paralyzing. Once you have and I wrote about this in my book, but it's almost like you've entered into a shadow world, a world that is soulless, a place that you don't think that anyone will ever look at you as whole again. And it's a very long climb out of that place. And, you know, I have a young daughter, and I was very worried when my book came out. I was very worried, you know, when the film Wonderland came out, because small town people, you know, they'll have their opinions, and will they judge me? Will they, not knowing the entire story, assume one way or the other that this was something I had complete control about, you know, over?
It was your
and
fault.
How do you? Yes, and the victim blaming goes on, and it's another way to shove you down and keep you from getting better and keeping you
mm-hmm.
in that shame and guilt and remorse. How do you break that cycle? How do you, you know, it's a tough road. You need as much support as you possibly can, and you have to stay true to yourself. And for me, it was about protecting my daughter. I mean, I knew that my story was tough, but it was certainly, she needed to hear it from me and not from anybody else. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
The truth. So,
Back to the red flags. What would you say are some red flags? Because for anybody who's listening who's got teenagers to talk to them about, or who is a teen listening, what would you say are some red flags they can be watching out for?
Whether they're a teen or even young adult, because really it doesn't really matter. It's going on. The seduction, this groom, it doesn't matter the age. You can be 25 years old. You can be 45 years old. It still happens. But for the younger ones, you know, the younger people that mm-hmm. like in your situation, Dawn, where you didn't have the opportunity for the education.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Well, you know, I think that the power differential is a huge red flag. And when I describe that to kids, I say, look, what makes a relationship is a relationship because it's equal. You're on equal footing. You're on equal footing. That means I bring into this relationship exactly what you do. But, I mean, it looks different. It's unique, but it's equal. A 32-year-old and a 15-year-old, what's equal about that?
That's right.
There's nothing that I can compare to. I was reliant on him to, you know, show me the area, to teach me how to do things. I mean, you know, he was in the role of a teacher father. That's never going to be anybody who you want to go kiss. You know, that's a red flag. But, you know, if somebody is twisting the reality around you to make it appear that, you know, to, you know, blow off or talk off, you know, the red flag and say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so doesn't care. And, you know, I've done it with, you know, somebody else and we had a relationship for a while and they were cool about it, you know, and that peer pressure, that pressure to be cool, you know, those kinds of things. If you start feeling uncomfortable, if it's not right, if the relationship isn't equal, it has no business being a relationship. Because then it's manipulation. Then it's somebody with more power taking advantage of somebody with less.
Yeah, that's right.
While we're at a pause, now would be a great time for our commercial.
Is this our new commercial? All right. Thank you, Maria, to our producer for
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Now a message from our sponsor, EducateEtiquette.com. Have you ever been at a table with a group of people and there is one person being rude on their cell phone? Have you mentioned it to that person and they still do it as if they just don't care as much for those around them in the flesh as they do for their own personal thread on Facebook? It's even worse when you're around our older generation who really have a hard time understanding how people can form relationships this way. There is wisdom in their thinking, so please don't be rude. Put it away in respect. Yourself, most of all. Thank you for joining us on Soul Sister Enterprise, and please visit us at www.educateetiquette.com.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser.
Thank you.
Thank you for your support.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Soul Sister Radio.
I'm here.
Okay.
That's a great commercial.
Is it just us, Maria? Don?
You're live. Go ahead, ladies.
Welcome back.
I'm here.
We're here at Safety First is Murphy's Law, and we're here with Dawn Schiller and Star Myers. Dawn, welcome back to our second half. Did you like our advertisement?
Oh, I do. I love the voice. Soul.
Soul sister. I'm going to get that voice down pat. I can't do that yet, but I'm
going to
get that.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
So anyway, back to what we were saying. You know, I just think all the red flags and the grooming and all of that is so important to understand. And I just want to continue talking about this. But, you know, I wanted to say with women, let's say, that are vulnerable, you know, to these kind of men, will they be able to spot these red flags? If they become aware of them, they will be able to see them as mm-hmm. somebody approaches them. But mm-hmm. if they aren't taught or they're not brought this to their attention, mm-hmm. it could just go right in front of them and then find themselves in these hard situations. And like what you said about getting out, you mm-hmm. knew that you were in deep, and you didn't know how to get out.
Yeah,
there's so many people out there in those shoes right now.
Yeah,
and like going to the police, that's a really scary thing.
That's very scary, and it could be dangerous in some instances. And if you've been battered and you're in a position where, you know, your batterer is telling you, you know, don't go to the police and I'll kill you, or making you afraid of them, you have a legitimate fear. You have a legitimate fear of breaking out of this person's cage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, I would say listen to your gut and find safe opportunities to reach out for help. You know, never risk your life, ever. Sometimes when you're in deep and you know as a survivor, you have to endure maybe an hour or two, you know, to find that safe moment. But, you know, you talked about the evidentiary abuse affidavit. You know, if you have things like that, you know, slowly getting things like that in line, that'll help you for that final break once you're able to do that, you know. So,
thank you for saying that because it is. It's about the documentation.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's just a little bit at a time, it will add up. And sometimes, you know, when you sit down and go, okay, I got to write this stuff out, that's too overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you can break it down.
Right. If you can, and again, the idea is to be safe. I mean, the ideal situation is to be able to document everything and have it all perfect in a nice, neat bundle. But even little bits, like you were saying, are going to help you because that's evidence. It's evidence in your favor, especially because we know that when a predator is put up against the wall or accused or finally the spotlight's put on them, they're going to lie. They're going to completely lie, and they're going to try and spin it around and make it, you know, your fault. You know, they're going to make it the victim's fault. And then you have that battle on top of, you know, being emotionally, mentally, and physically exhausted from, you know, battling just to get away. Then you have to worry about other people's, you know, the pressure there. And that doesn't end up well sometimes. Yeah.
You know, and then you're battling, you know, being confused on top of all of this.
Right.
There is, like you said, there is support and...
Right.
And the work that you're doing with Justine is just so beautiful.
Right.
I mean,
thank you. You know, it's you know, with all nonprofits, it's a slow road. We don't have, you know, big money backers. We don't have all that. We do. It's all volunteer, except for, you know, what little grants we get, and then we put it out there, and we try to put together little mentoring events, and I really believe in those because here's the thing that is going to help. This is the other aspect of helping kids not be vulnerable, and that is, you know, you can't change the circumstance. What makes you vulnerable is being raised when you need to be raised, when you need guidance as a kid or a teen, you know, and you're not getting guidance, good guidance. You're getting instead abuse or neglect, you know, either one or the other or both. And so that's key. That makes you vulnerable. You should might as well put a big old sign on and just go, you know, just get it over with. I'm here, you know. really, because it's that you're that easy, technically,
right.
You know. And it's sad. I mean, I was very disheartened when I learned, when I started to get the education after I got out, that that statistics that I met up, you know, the data. I was a part of the data. So,
right.
You know, and that's kind of sad because you don't realize that it's happening all over and you were just another one of the many souls that get pulled in. And the reason they get pulled in is because of the abuse and neglect and the way it chips away at their self-esteem and leaves them vulnerable. How do we help? We can't change people's parents. How do we help that? How do, you know, the really good solution is mentoring. And mentoring in the traditional sense usually means, you know, you have a mentorship. It lasts 9 months to a year. It's a commitment with the person, usually a kid in foster care system, you know, that type of thing. But most people are, you know, that's a huge commitment. I always like to bend the rules and tell people, you know, you have something to give right now. It doesn't have to be a year commitment. You know, it doesn't have to be every Friday, Saturday of, you know, for a year. You know,
that's right.
But what it
it
can be these events or these moments in time where you can organize and gather and pull together your resources as a community of what you can offer and show these kids of how, you know, make it accessible to them, make it, you know, free, do some fundraising around your neighborhood, you know, and create an event, even if it's just a weekend event, or, you know, rent a campsite and do it as a camp like we did with Mirrors of Me. And show these girls, you know, what it is to mentor each other, what it is to have be empowered, what it is to heal, be creative, have their voice heard, process the pain, and know that they have a life ahead of them that is more than just being the property of some, you know, of some boy who's, you know, trying to pressure you.
That's right.
Knowing that there's an education ahead of you. And even if it is only for a weekend or a week at a time, and the kids go back to that home situation that they're bound to, because until
mm-hmm.
they're 18 years old,
mm-hmm.
after they're 18, there is a moment where they're going to say, you know what, I don't have to be in this. And maybe I can remember what I was told, that I could be more and I can do more. You know, you never know what little spark is going to be the right spark at the right moment for that person to change their life and to come out of it.
Well,
so
you know,
I heard always hope.
I heard
yeah.
something really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How passion develops from suffering.
Yeah.
And I thought, isn't that interesting? You know, we heard this. Actually, it was Pastor Rick Warren from Saddleback Church.
Oh.
Do you know who he is?
No, it sounds really familiar. I'll have to look it up.
He's just amazing that his son just passed away 17 weeks ago from mental illness. And it's so sad and it's so amazing at the same time that a man like this was given a tragedy and he says, mm-hmm. you know, it's this suffering that's creating my passion to bring this awareness and reduce the stigma of mental illness.
Right. Right.
And I have goosebumps just thinking about it right now. It was the most amazing thing. So anybody mm-hmm. out there that is feeling
right.
hopeless, you know, mm-hmm. just remember there is a bigger reason. There
right.
is a purpose. You do
right.
have a purpose in this life.
We have a purpose
and
we have a great story. And out of suffering comes hope, and out of suffering comes the you know, some of the greatest teachers, really, because I think that, you know, people,
right,
there's
Dawn.
So much art that comes out of these kids. Oh my gosh, you know, in the at the camps, the Mirrors of Me camps, in the end, they get a campus tour of Eastern Oregon University, and the provost kind of personally tours them around campus and gives them an opportunity to present their writing. I do a little mini memoir writing workshop with them throughout the week, and they write about a moment in time that is important to them, and they
right.
test their creative waters, but they also have an opportunity to speak about some of that pain and how they can transform it into a healing, into a message, into poetry or art.
That's
and
cool.
what they do is they end up, you know, presenting it in the little theater that we have here, and we film it. And it's one, I'm not kidding, there's not a dry eye. These girls
oh my
have
God.
that these girls have a moment to where they can share some dark stuff that they're hiding, that we don't even know by looking at them from the outside. You know, we don't even understand. Right. And so it's a great healing for them, but out of that comes a freedom. It's like they break the bondage of that of those circumstances that happen to them, not because of them. You know what I mean?
And that's beautiful.
It is beautiful, and it's a really wonderful. It's not a dry eye. I'll tell you, not a dry eye. And even if we can't do, like, this year our funds are a little short and we lost some of our funders, I'm afraid to say, so we couldn't do the camp this year. But that doesn't mean we've given up. We're just regrouping. And, you know, even if the kids, you know, are too old later on when the camp comes up again to come back, they remember that moment where they were able to not be trapped by their circumstances and surely not by their past. So
that's right. Well, Dawn, where can everybody find you? Because I am sure people are going to want to read more about you after this show.
Well, that's, you know, where can you find me? The funny thing is, this is another reason why Esteem is regrouping, is because I actually was just awarded a scholarship to get my master's in women's studies and to and to graduate teach at Oregon State University. So in 3 weeks' time, I will be in Corvallis, Oregon, and near the campus. And so I'm excited to be able to be in a university setting and shadow teaching and get involved.
Yeah.
And get Esteem built locally into more of the local shelters. And we'll see what happens. I think there's a lot of good things on the horizon.
Oh, I can see. So I'm sure the college is going to be more than happy to support you on that venture, too. My goodness. So
that would be lovely.
Now and then, and you know, we will all be looking for you and supporting you, and anything that you need from us to help get your name out there and help educate people about what you're doing. You know, we're pleased to.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I it's, you know, education is the key, and understanding what puts us in these situations and understanding how to communicate to people the ways to get out has really become a focus in my life. And, you know, again, that's turned into my passion. Never thought in a million years this would be something I would be doing, but everybody has a story. And so I really I'm excited about maybe teaching how to write, you know, people to help people write their stories, or to, you know, write some stories for other people. I really want to produce women's stories, young girls' stories, because I think they're important. I think historically,
that's beautiful.
Yeah, historically, women, you know, it's very difficult to find recorded history of women's voices.
You said it's a very difficult thing to write about. And I think that what you are saying about writing other women's stories, I mean, giving them value, giving their stories value, because oftentimes, you know, me being one of them, I'm not ready to put my story out there yet, you know? And that's okay, too. But I know there's a story that needs to be told. And
now, Dawn.
I like what you're saying about helping others write their story. Go ahead, Star. I'm sorry.
Now, how could someone, if she was a young teenager who wanted to get her story out there, how would she go about doing that? How would you help her? What would she need to do?
What would she need to do? Well, you know, right now on our website, which is www.empowerteens.com, we're trying to build we have a featured blog area where I have a young lady who, well, let me go to it right now. She writes a blog called Be the Change. She's a survivor. She's a teen, and she does. She is just thrilled to be able to put her blog out there, and so we could feature it on our website. Yes, I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to have, you know, other kids. Sorry, there goes my other phone. But
I thought that was mine, so I'm glad it's yours.
No, it's mine. That's okay. So, you know, I would be happy to do that. A lot of kids just, you know, to write into the website, to write comments under the blog would be great, and then we can do back and forth there. It is in my future to organize workshops and yes, because it really, you know, it's quite a process to write a story, and it depends on what, you know, you have to start with the little things like, okay, what's your intent? If it's just meant for you, that's fine, but really there has to be a process to write a story, and oftentimes if you're writing about pain and suffering and abuse and survival, those thoughts are really jumbled, and you need a strong outline in order to organize your thoughts and organize the story, and then to separate the superfluous from the pertinent, you know, so you want to be able to identify what's going to bring the story forward and what is stuff that just is good to have in the background, you know, and because you can get bogged down with the details, and I find a lot of writers do that, especially if there's trauma. They, you know, it's all of the little things, you know, and you don't want to abuse yourself again. That's the key thing. Key
That's
thing.
Right.
You never, the intent for writing is never to re-traumatize, ever, ever, ever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So there's a, you know, I would love to develop that whole, you know, entry level educational workshop for, you know, any,
it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then take it and steps from there. You know, as a writer, you go from there. You know, there's a lot of options of publishing. You can self-publish. There's a lot of pros and cons to that. You can try to do it old-fashioned and get an agent and find a publisher. There's a lot of pros and cons to that. You know, there's different venues. If you want to do it in poetry, if you want to, you know, be completely internet, if you want to do it articles, that's really wonderful. So I'm welcoming. I actually do messages on Facebook. I do a call out to people who want to write a small piece on what it is to overcome, or maybe what they've seen in their neighborhood, or things like I did a spotlight on a shelter that I visited, a teen shelter that I thought was, you know, it was profound to me, that visit, because we visited a site on the Penobscot River where a young girl was murdered by an older guy, and so it was quite moving, and it was important. So I wrote that piece. I've done calls out to people to submit to me, you know, if they're willing to, you know, and I would use the website in order to highlight their work.
Now, I just want to add that also Imagine Publicity helps with that, because I'm fairly certain they did Susan Crone, they did her book, right? It's not Susan's book. I'm thinking they did, but I just wanted to give a shout out to,
marketing
to Delilah.
Promote.
Yes, they did the marketing and promoting. So maybe you guys could get together on that. And
oh,
I
absolutely.
Also know
I love
daughter,
Delilah. Delilah and I have gotten together a lot.
She is awesome.
I
just
want to
thank her for all her support. Cause,
yeah.
Without her, we would not be here. But my daughter was interested in writing for you because she has started writing at 14. She's writing her story of her abuse.
Very good.
And
very
she's actually
good.
Working on her fifth book. She's wrote and published four of them on Wattpad. But now she's doing her own book, her story of her abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and then her suicide. Then she wants to publish that in the other half of my book and do a dual thing. One side is the story from my perspective, and the other side is hers.
Very
you know
cool.
What?
See, that's very cool. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Isn't that amazing, Dawn?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I've watched through the last few years this girl, this daughter of stars, grow up, and watching the things that she has done and accomplished in these last 3 years is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Oh.
And she, you know, she's a freshman in high school, and she's playing like varsity sports. She's a cheerleader. She's wrestling. She's softball.
Nice.
She was just recognized. She gets great grades.
Mm-hmm.
She is just an amazing role model for
teen
that has experienced abuse, and to
wonderful.
Say, you know what, you can make it.
And Susan Murphy Milano was had a lot to do with that because my daughter and Susan were connected, and they texted and talked and shared each other's stories back and forth because Susan shared her most recent book before it was even published with her, and they and that inspired her to open up to Susan because at that time she was, she had given up that anyone was going to help her.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, you know, I love hearing the fact that, you know, she's empowered by mentoring others with she knows. Because we teach others, you know, self-esteem comes from the way others, we're reflected off of others, you know. So if we have somebody positive around us who's seeing the things that we do as positive, we're going to, it's going to absorb back to us as we're positive, empowered people.
I have to say that Tracy is one of those people that, she has that effect on her. Because that's the first one she wants to call is Tracy.
Oh, awesome.
But Susan was also that one because they texted back and forth, and it was just amazing because she opened her up.
But that's why what you're doing, Dawn, is so powerful. Because these young girls, they want their voice to be heard. They do want. But
because
there's so much fear that's keeping them back and keeping them stuck, but giving them that outlet, that opening right there.
Just one person to support them is all they need, and I cannot even imagine all of them you've reached, because actually she read your story as well. And we watched the movie, except we had to fast forward over a few parts.
The movie Wonderland?
I was kind of scared at first. I'm like, oh, no, sex right away.
Well, the story obviously is different than my book, you know, so.
And then after that was over, it was, the rest of it was okay. Just the beginning, I was like, oh, no, give me the remote.
Isn't that amazing how a movie can just distort the whole thing?
Well, the ID channel just did a really pretty good interview type, you know, piece that that I think I think they're going to re-air it at some point. I don't know when, but it aired on the 22nd of July a couple of weeks ago, and I'm still waiting for my copy.
I saw that.
Did you watch
that post? Didn't you have that posted?
I did post it. Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah, I sure did then. But I didn't realize that was just a couple of weeks ago, huh?
Yeah, that was just a couple of weeks ago, and I was.
How exciting.
It was, you know, I thought they did, you know, they really did. They went by the book, and they very much highlighted the fact that I was so much younger than he was and the way that he groomed me. And those were very important, and they paid attention. So I do have to give kudos to ID Channel for, you know, paying attention to the victim's voice, you know, not trying to glorify the villain because, you know, I've battled uphill with John because too many people wanted to preserve his career image as, you know, some amazing person. And I'm sitting here going, but wait a minute, I was that kid he had in that garage apartment for years that he took advantage of because nobody was looking out for me. And really nobody cared that I was missing either.
Ladies,
yes.
I have a very sad announcement. We are down to less than a minute. I am so sad. I hope that Dawn will come back because I'd love to hear more about the teens articles that she wants, because I think a lot of people might be interested in sharing their perspective of teens to your website.
Yeah.
I have been posting all your book information and your website in the blog. And before
thank
I forget,
you.
I want to thank all our listeners. And I want to thank Imagine Publicity again. Delilah gave us the right to use the EAA, and Susan is the reason that we are all here. And I want to thank all our sponsors. And Dawn, do you have one last thing you'd like to say to everyone listening? We have 30 seconds.
You know, find a good adult to trust and reach out to them. Don't be afraid. Go ahead and ask the questions. Reach out.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
And if the first person doesn't listen, reach out again.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you, Dawn.
Well,
I appreciate
your
time more than you know.
Oh,
and it
well,
is an honor to have you here.
Oh, it's an
thank
honor to be asked to be on, and I appreciate you, and I'm just so glad. Look what you've done with everything since I've seen you last. That's amazing.
Oh,
Dar,
yes.
It was lovely talking to you as well.
You too, and thanks our listeners. We'll be here at the same time, same place next week with Charlie Stecker. So please join us then. And Dawn, thank you so much.
Okay, everybody, take care and be safe.
Thank you. You too.
Soul
Bye.
Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
I want to take a moment to just give a special thank you to our show sponsors, ImageCoach.com, Soul Sister Enterprise, the Law Office of Corrine R. Walson, and to our station sponsors, Heart4.com and 4 International, where we elevate and empower those who are overcoming adversity.
Soul Sister Radio.